So what Gordon was trying to do is we have QD, and the question is the following: we have the photon propagator. How we renormalize this photon propagator? Okay, so we'll have some function with these Lorentz indexes. And this will be the correction due to the electron, okay? Plus some counter terms. Now I think Gordon already started to compute this loop diagram, right? And we got to a result like this. Does it sound familiar? Okay, so here we are integrating on the momentum that is flowing there in the loop. Here, this guy here is the Feynman parameter that Gordon already introduced. This is the mass of the electron. Okay. And here are the two Lorentz indexes, okay? Then, at the end of the lecture, Gordon already introduced this weak rotation. To Euclidean space, and basically, thanks to the rotation, the first component of the momentum was transforming in this way. And instead, the spatial components of the momentum were remaining invariant. Okay? And this is actually quite convenient because this integral here will be quite simplified. And in general, what we have is that thanks to this rotation, we can write down our integral in L. In the Euclidean space. I'm going relatively quickly because I guess that these have been already discussed. Is that true? Okay. And then this guy here is kind of easy to compute because can be expressed in this way. So basically, the trick is the following: going to Euclidean space, going to Euclidean space, and here is all the angular dependence, right? And here we are left in integrating some function that depends on the length of this vector, since all the angular dependence is here. Okay. So. Here we are good. And then I think probably the last step that was introduced by Gordon was saying, okay, here we have an integral in four dimensions. It's also pretty convenient to, instead of writing an integral in four dimensions, to go to d dimensions, where we can write down d as 4 minus epsilon. Can do all this computation in d dimension, and then at the very end, what we will do is to investigate what happens when we take the limit for epsilon going to 0. So basically, this general expression here to compute integrals in the dimension will become in this way, right? So have the dimension and here we have d minus 1. Sounds good? Okay, see, I think this is where we were. So now the aim will be to use these tools that we have learned with Gordon and recap here to compute this integral here. Okay, so let's do a little bit of practice using d dimensions. So the problem of d dimensions is that now our fields, our quantities, will depend. So the dimension, the mass dimension of our fields, won't be anymore the mass dimension that we know from usual, you know, quantum field theory, but will depend on this d dimension. Okay. So let's see a little bit how we can compute the mass dimension of the several fields and parameters that are entering in this integral here. Okay? So what we have is, since we are computing the correction to the photon propagator, the question is, what is the mass dimension of the photon? Okay? So what we know how to write down the action. We should have already learned it. So we know that the action, we can write it down in d dimension as the integral in d dimension of the Lagrangian. Okay? So this is our action. And this is dimensionless. That's right? But then, what we know is that for QED, we have the kinetic term for our photon. And already Gordon wrote down this kinetic term for the photon in this form here. And then from here, we can plug it in, we can do our computation of dimensions. And it turns out that the photon in a d-dimension space has dimension d minus 2 over 2. Okay? And this is pretty general, right? We can, of course, take four dimension as we are used to. We can take d equal to 4 minus epsilon. This is a general formula. Then if we have understood this, we can compute the mass dimension of the electron. So we have to do the same thing. But now here, the piece of the Lagrangian that we are interested in is the kinetic term for our electron. And again, this guy has to be dimensionless. So what we learn is that the mass dimension of the electron is given by d minus 1 over 2. Am I going too fast, or what do you think? Pretty okay, maybe. Okay, so this exercise is actually with the aim of finding the mass dimension for this electric charge here. that is entering in this loop diagram. Okay? So, what is this guy? So, what we have to do is to take the interaction between our photon and electron, QED. Gordon already introduced this interaction that is given by, you can write it in this way, right? So this piece of the Lagrangian you have already seen. Again, this is a piece that goes into here, the Lagrangian. This has to be dimension D in such a way that this is dimensionless. But then we have everything, right? Because we know what is the mass dimension of the photon, of this guy. We know the mass dimension of this guy. This is what we have just found. So what we learn from here is that the mass dimension of this coupling here is given by 4 minus d over 2. Okay? Now, as we knew, if we go simply in 4 dimensions, then this is dimensionless. And this is a good check that we are doing it right. Okay? But then, if you generalize it to a, you know, arbitrary number of dimensions, this will have some mass dimension. Okay? So basically, what we have to do in this type of framework, if we want to do the computation of that integral in the dimensions, is to do something, some fictitious replacing. So basically, you have our electric charge in 4 dimensions. This will be, so let me put a 4 just to, as a reminder that we are in 4 dimensions. If we want to write down this electric charge in the dimensions, we need some mass dimension, right? So what we do is to introduce some mass scale, mu. So the mass dimension of mu is 1, okay? And then we need to take this mu to this power, 4 minus d over 2. And then we take our electric charge, okay? So basically, this to tell us that we have to replace in that integral there was in 4 dimensions. If we want to write it in d dimensions, we have to replace our coupling, our electric charge, in this way, because we need somehow to get a dimension for this electric charge. Okay? So basically, what we will have to do is to compute diagrams of this type. So before we had the integral in 4 dimensions of e squared over s squared minus delta squared. So this was some part of that integral there. This is the electric charge in 4 dimensions. This is, I call it the delta, that is all this part here that doesn't depend on the momentum on which you are integrating, okay? So integrals like this in 4 dimensions will be replaced to by something like the integral in the dimensions. We have to replace the electric charge. So we have mu to the 4 minus d power e squared right? So when we do this transformation, we have to take care of the right treatment of this electric charge. But then it's kind of easy to do these integrations here, because we also know that we have this nice trick of going to Euclidean space, right? So first we can do the integral on this sphere, on the surface of the sphere, and then this integral here. So I think at home you can look at the details, but I think it's pretty straightforward right now. So I can give you the result for this integral here, for example, and we'll have something like I to the then we have the gamma function. So here I'm introducing the gamma function that is coming actually once you do, as we know, the integral on the surface of the sphere, right? And then this is the delta that appears at the denominator. And this is our electric charge, as we have just learned. Okay, is that clear? I hope on the back, can you read my handwriting? I'm not sure. Okay, very good. Actually, do you know how to move this blackboard up and down? Okay. Very good. Okay, so now basically we have the expertise in computing all these type of diagrams, all these type of integrals. But then we have said that we want to go in d dimensions, but then we are interested in looking at the limit for epsilon going to zero. So what we can do is to expand expressions like this for small epsilon, okay? And so this is a simple expansion, right? So basically here we have mu, so this mass parameter to this power 4 minus t. 4 minus t is nothing other than our epsilon, because we said that d is 4 minus epsilon, right? So we can do our expansion, right? And this is kind of easy. So we'll have, we know that mu to the epsilon will be more or less equal to 1 plus epsilon logarithm of mu, right? So we can do all the expansions wherever we see that we have some epsilon dependence, like here, and here, and here, okay? So let me write down for you the result for the first two terms in epsilon coming from here. And so let's say, get it from here back. So we have second power of the coupling, 16 pi square. So basically what we have is a first term that is divergent for epsilon going to zero, okay? This is some term that is finite for epsilon going to zero. This is the so-called Euler gamma constant that is coming from the expansion of the gamma function that we've seen before. And these are, you know, other terms that are coming from, right, expanding this term here and this term here. Okay? Yeah, for a matter of convenience, I can write down this result as I just simplify a little bit. Okay. And so as we have learned, so this dependence on mu, on this mass parameter, is simply a fictitious dependence that you get because of the electric charge, right? That has to have the right mass dimension. Okay. So in principle, it's nothing, you know, physical. So what I can do is simply, for a matter of convenience, to call all this numerator as a mu bar square, right? Simply the definition of this mass scale parameter that we need. Okay. So basically, so this is one part of that loop integral that we have to solve, okay? What we have done is to go from four dimension to d dimension and expand in epsilon, okay? But then, so these expanded terms like this. And then we have also other terms that could be solved using relations like, so we have terms where that have a momentum dependence at the denominator, right? So terms like this. That's right. And these terms can be integrated in a very similar way if we use the identity in the dimension that tells us that this guy here in, let's say, four dimensions is equal to 1 over d, g mu nu, L square. Okay? So this is a way to write down terms that have this Lorentz structure in our integral in 4D. In basically a in the dimension, right? So I think now, tell me if I am wrong, but we have really all the ingredients to do that integral in the dimensions. That's right? So of course, if then at home you look at your notes and you miss some, you know, some part or something is not clear, I will tell you what is my office. Please find me, okay? So the result for this integral that we'll have e square over 2 pi square. So let's see if we recognize this integral here. So I'm keeping still the integration on this Feynman parameter x. What I've done is to do the integral in the momentum, right? The integral in the momentum we know how to do because we have learned for, you know, some of the pieces how to do it, right? This mu bar here is what I have defined here. It is giving us the right dimensions, right? And this denominator here is what I was calling before big delta, okay? So I replace it here inside. No. See? Okay, so now we have kind of a preliminary result of this integral. We are keeping still this integral in x because it's kind of complicated to do at this point. We see that we need still a couple of tricks to understand how to do this integral too. Okay, so let's keep this result here in mind. Okay, and let's summarize a bit what we have found up to now. So what we have found is a propagator of the photon, okay? That will be, can be written as so we have our bare propagator, as we have seen from the Feynman rules of Gordon some days ago. Loop contributions, what we have computed up to now, and this is the result that we have found. And counter terms, okay? So now we can start to put the pieces together, right? So what we can write down as the full expression for the propagator of the photon is our bare propagator, so this should be the Feynman rule that Gordon already showed you for the propagator in QED of the photon, okay? Then we have this guy here. So we can write it down as g mu alpha over p square. Do we understand this expression? So what I'm doing is taking this loop function here, this pi alpha beta. The pi alpha beta is nothing other than this. Of course, the Lorentz indexes are different, but so this will be our pi, you know? Right? So this is what we have computed up to now. And then, of course, we have to put together with two propagators of the photons, right? So this is the full expression for this loop diagram, okay? Plus, we need this last piece, the counter term. So we have, again, to write down our first propagator, p squared. And this delta 3 here is the counter term that already Gordon introduced to you. Is that right? Do we remember? Okay. So basically, the exercise now is to take this expression and understand what counterterm we need in such a way that the full expression is finite, because we need something physical that is finite, even in the limit of epsilon going to zero. So question is, what is the value of delta 3 that I have to take? So we need the delta 3 so that the coefficient, let me write it here, of the pole in the physical propagator is equal to 1. Okay? So let's see from here what are the pieces that we have to take. So we have seen that so this pi alpha beta can be written as p square. We have this momentum, that is this guy here, right? Times our metric, g alpha beta, times something that depends only on p square, right? So this is simply this expression here. But then if we compare, if we take the entire expression, we see that if we want to have this condition here, then we need to have delta 3 equal to minus this pi function here computed at the zero momentum. Okay. Now, actually, since we want this loop function here computed at zero momentum, then now it's easy to do this integral in x, once that we put this p squared is equal to zero. So we can finally do also this last integral in the Feynman parameter x. Then we have the final result for this loop integration. So this guy, I expect that you are able to do the integral in x. So this guy will be equal to e to the second power, so the electric charge to the second power, 6 pi squared, 1 over epsilon, plus e squared, 12 pi squared, logarithm, mu squared over m squared. So this is the result for our counterterm. We see that we have this first part that is divergent in epsilon. And we need, in such a way that then the full expression will be physical, won't have any divergences. And then we have also this term here that is giving us basically the dependence on some momentum, on some mass scale parameter mu. Okay. So finally, this completes the computation of Gordon in regularizing and computing the correction to the photon propagator in QED. Now we have this counterterm, delta 3. Okay? But then why actually are we interested to delta 3? So what is kind of the physics that is behind that? Okay? So let's try to understand this point, and then we can pass to the next argument. Okay? So I think, can I erase the first blackboard that I've written? So. Oh, I see. It started to be complicated. yeah, I think. So I guess You have all written this blackboard here, right? You can hide it. Okay. So we have already seen with Gordon that we can write down our electric charge in this way. So we have seen this expression that is relating our bare electric charge before renormalization to the electric charge after renormalization, okay? And these z functions here are the functions that Gordon already defined for the regularization of QED, okay? Then, as a final reminder, we have also learned that actually these two z's are related by gauge invariants. They're the same. So at this point, we should have learned that the renormalized electric charge is equal to the bare electric charge in QED times Z3 to the 1/2 mu to the minus epsilon over 2. But actually, this Z3 is nothing other than 1 plus delta 3. The delta 3 is the one that we have computed now. Okay. So we know also that this guy here is the bare coupling of QED, so it doesn't have any mass dependence, right? It's just a number of our Lagrangian. So all the mass dependence come from here. That's right? So basically what we can do is to ask this question. We have this renormalized quantity for the electric charge. How this guy here depends on our mass parameter mu? So we can compute the derivative of ER with respect to our mass parameter mu. This will be equal to E0, the derivative of Z3 to the 1/2 mu minus epsilon over 2. So this guy goes out from the derivation because it doesn't depend on mu. This guy, we know the dependence on mu because we have found delta 3. Okay. So we know how to compute this derivative, right? And actually what we can write down is this derivative in this way, just as a matter of convention. So we write down this derivative, so we put out the epsilon dependence. So this was the parameter that then we have to put to zero. Okay? And this is what is called the beta function of QED. Okay, so thanks to our computation of this delta 3, now we are able to compute a beta function of QED, okay? And we can find that we can write down this beta function as ER over 2Z3, the derivative of Z3 with respect to the mass k. Okay. Then actually we can do a step more because so we have to computed Z3 at one loop level, but then we can imagine to do, you know, higher order corrections, so not just one loop, right? I'm not going to do this exercise for you, but what we can write down is this generic formula. So we have this renormalization function Z3 that can be written as 1 plus some sum of k going to, from 1 to infinity of 2 to the k power epsilon to the k . So actually we can imagine to do, you know, multi-loop computations, and then we'll be always in this form. So this k is an index of how many loops we have. We have computed the first loop, and we have seen that we have this 1 over epsilon dependence, right? Now, this 2 here is just a matter of convention, how you normalize this epsilon, so it's not really important. Just let's be consistent. So we have to put it here, OK? And then, of course, if you go to, let's say, 2 loops, you will have a 1 over epsilon squared dependence, and so on and so forth, OK? So this Z3 comma, this is a comma, k, is the coefficient in front of every epsilon, 1 over epsilon power. So from this computation here, we know what is Z3 1, that is this coefficient here, right? So what we have is, so for k equal to 1, we have found that delta 3 is ER to the second power with 6 pi square 1 over epsilon. And then we can plug in here, and we find that actually the beta function at one loop of QED is equal plus ER to the third power over 12 pi square. So I put explicitly this sign here, plus, because what this sign is telling us is that we have a coupling, so the electric charge, that is actually becoming stronger and stronger if you go to higher values for this mass quantity. Okay, so this is telling us that how the coupling of QED is running with the energy. Okay, so we have to keep in mind actually this plus sign here, because this is the result of QED. Actually, the next topic will be QCD, and we'll see that in QCD, actually, we have an opposite sign here. And this is important because this is physical and this is telling us something about the theory. Okay? So actually, this is completing our discussion of QED. Are there some questions, maybe? You are quite silent. Anyway, if there are no questions, I think we can pass to QCD. Okay? And so let me see what I can erase. Yeah. Oops. Let me erase here. So let me give you the last 15 minutes or so some idea of why we need QCD, why we need these new interactions of particles. So what we know is that actually there are no free quarks, okay? So the quarks are actually coming together to form what we call hadrons. So what we see in the reality are not the quarks that have been introduced by Gordon, but some composition of quarks. So we have two types of states. One are the baryon states that are three quarks together. Okay. So some examples that you might have heard are the proton, for example. This is in a combination of UUD with a mass something like 1 GeV. This is important, of course, for people that are interested to LHC physics, because at a large hadron collider, we are colliding protons. So we are not colliding free quarks, but protons. But then we don't have just protons. There are really many of these baryons that have been discovered with the time, several decades. So we have, for example, so proton, then we have the lambda, that is a state of UDS. So we have several of them. Then we have the delta in several charge states. So we have the delta zero, the delta plus or minus, delta plus plus or minus minus. Okay. So don't want to list all the baryons to you. There are many. But just to tell you that, so this is a possibility for quarks to come together. This is not the only possibility, because we have also mesons. And the mesons are states of two quarks together. Okay. So for example, we'll have the pions that are states of up quark and down quark together. So for example, there will be the charged pion, that is the state here, U D bar. Okay. The mass of this guy is something like 130, 140 MeV. As we see in the following, actually, I'm putting a range. Actually, I should have put also a range here for these guys here, because the mass depends on the charge state that we are taking, as we'll see, a little bit. There will be some variation of the mass. Not only pions, but then we'll have kaons. This will be actually the topic of next lecture, or maybe two lectures, depending on how fast I am. So kaons are states of U and S. So strange quark instead of down quark. So we'll have the corresponding of pi plus, the k plus, that is given by U S bar. Masses of 500 MeV, around 500 MeV. Okay. So why I'm telling this to you? Telling this to you because actually the discovery of these baryons and mesons tell us that we must have some new interactions beyond QED. Okay. And the reason is the following. So we knew of the existence of this delta plus plus, this guy here. It is a baryon, and is a state of three quarks, as we said, three up quarks. Okay? Now, from measurements, we know that these three upcurves are together in such a way that we have a spin, a total spin of 3/2. So all the spins of these upquarks are in the same direction. So we'll have a state like this. But then maybe can understand from here the problem. So the problem is that if you look at simply this state here, with the charges that are all the same, the spins that are the same, we have the problem that this state here would be symmetric under the exchange of two of these quarks. Okay? But this is a problem because we know that we have the Pauli exclusion principle, so we should not be able to exchange two of these quarks and get a symmetric state. Okay? So we need some new interaction that is telling us that at the end of the day, this state here is asymmetric if we exchange two of these quarks. Okay? That's why we need a new quantum number for these states. And the quantum number, the new quantum number, is what we call the color. So we'll have three colors. Actually, these have been called with a lot of fantasy, the red, blue, and green. And since we have this new quantum number, we can give to the several quark states a different color in such a way that when we exchange two quarks, we have an asymmetric state. Okay? So this to give you a little bit of idea of why we need you know, QCD, some new quantum number. And so let me So quarks will be then a fundamental representation of this new quantum number. So this, actually this quantum number will be associated to this symmetry, SU3 symmetry. So quarks are triplets or anti-triplets under SU3, okay? So basically, the way for going back to our baryon delta plus plus, the way of making a totally antisymmetric state is to use the epsilon function. So basically, we'll have an epsilon ABC up A, up B, and up C. So these are our three upquarks. This index A, B, C are the SU3 indexes, okay? And this is a totally antisymmetric state. So now we are able to use this new quantum number to have some state that has the right symmetry properties, okay? So as we see, actually, I think in the next lecture, is how to add this additional quantum number here to our Lagrangian, and then how to write down all the interactions of this new SU3 group, because we have, as I said, the quarks that are fundamental representation of SU3, but then since we have a new gauge group, we'll have new forces associated to that. And the new forces are called gluons, that are in the adjoint representation of SU3. So there will be octet. So we'll have 8 states for gluons. And in the next lecture, we'll learn how to write down the Lagrangian, that is putting together our gluons, our new forces, with the quarks. Okay? So we'll go through that. We'll go through the Feynman rules of QCD. And then very briefly, I will show you what is the beta function of QCD and why we have a theory that is quite different now from QED. Okay? Does it sound good? So we have other 2 minutes, but I think it's not really good if I start with the QCD Lagrangian now. So I think if you have questions, it's a good time to ask. Otherwise, you can find me in the office. That actually, I don't remember the name, but I have to check it. It's on the 4th floor, basically up here. Okay? Questions? Yeah, if not, I think we'll see each other tomorrow.